If someone just sat down with Luke and read it through, what would they likely discover about Jesus' treatment of those in need? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson, your host and study guide author, continuing our series on The Least of These. And our theme today is Jesus and those in need. My conversation partners today are again Jody Washburn and Matilda Fry, both faculty members of the Walla Walla University School of Theology, and both Old Testament scholars. So let's go to that leading question. What happens if you just go to Luke and come through? What would you conclude about Jesus' treatment of those in need? Are there particular passages that come to mind from you in the Gospel of Luke?
Luke begins with the genealogy of Jesus coming through Mary, the mother.
The mother.
Yes. So the women take up a good part of the Gospel of Luke. That is one part. And then there are others, the children and the poor.
Uh-huh.
So Luke is the gospel of the people who are on the outside, on the margins of society. And Luke is paying attention to how Jesus is working for them, with them, uh-huh, including them.
You mentioned that the children, and I want to mention, because that's Luke 19:45-46, but I want to call attention to Matthew's version here, because Matthew is such a fascinating one here. When Jesus cleansed the temple, it tells how Jesus' anger drove the evil people from the temple, but the poor and the children came running to him. I would love to get angry like that, so that the evil people flee, mm-hmm, and the children are coming. Even when I'm trying to look nice, I scare the children. I still vividly remember one time, you know how the children's story at church, those at the that are on the rostrum are supposed to go and sit among the children to keep them from misbehaving. Mm-hmm. And I was doing that. And two little girls came running up, and they took one look at me and burst into tears and went back to their dads. But Jesus, that amazing example of how the evil people fled and the children came running. I think that is such a marvelous illustration. And so Matthew has an insight here that Luke doesn't quite, mm-hmm, include, but I think, mm-hmm, it's really, really wonderful. I find that very helpful.
I think it's fascinating also how Luke doesn't allow you to categorize people. We've talked in previous weeks about the prophets, you know, and, mm-hmm, Jesus heals the blind and he brings the fatherless and the widows and the orphans, right, to be incorporated into community, all these ideals from the prophets. And so you read Luke and you easily think, you know, he does after all cite these passages from the prophets when he's describing his ministry. And you think, okay, he's here for the women and for the all these people who could be easily shut out of power, of the power of society. But then you read through Luke and you have all intermixed. Like, for instance, transitioning from 18 to 19, you have, you know, the blind beggar, right? Poor and blind, right? And you think, yes, this is who God came to release and to heal. And then the very next story is Zacchaeus. Here's someone who is representing, I mean, he's a representative of the problematic power structure. And yet you have him wanting to see Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And
but
God,
he's also an excluded one.
Yes.
Because he is not one of
part
the
of the religious.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
And it's also striking because Zacchaeus, I mean, we think of the rich young ruler where the Lord told him to go and sell and give everything.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't do that with Zacchaeus.
Mm-hmm.
Zacchaeus volunteered.
Yes.
And apparently still had a fair bit left. But he wasn't criticized by Jesus for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just to me shows the fluidity, I suppose, right? Mm-hmm. You would have to have sort of a hardened yourself in a way to be able to function within that system. And yet Jesus is seeing the soft edge.
Yeah.
Right?
That's right. So Matilda, it looks like you've got your finger on another exciting passage in Luke, or are you just...
I just went through them. I did see the part where Jesus is in the synagogue and gives the sermon, speaks of the Spirit of the Lord who is upon me, mm-hmm, from...
Luke 4.
Yep.
Yes, Luke 4.
Yeah.
And then at the end, he continues to interpret and to preach. And he goes back to the time of Elijah, when Elijah was sent to none other than to Zarephath, yes. The woman of Sidon.
Outsider and a yes. woman.
Yeah. Yes, a Gentile uh-huh. and a woman and a widow.
Mm-hmm.
All of those parts are
That fits Luke's into the concern. Theme that you mentioned earlier, yes. Matilda, about yes. Luke is simply mm-hmm. emphasizes the outsider.
Yes.
It's amazing. Now, when Jesus spoke in that synagogue, his message was clearly to emphasize the poor.
Mm-hmm.
And the people didn't particularly want to hear his message, but that was certainly a key role. Now, another passage that our official study guide mentions is Mary's vision for her child. Mary's song celebrates how the small and the weak have become instruments of God's grace.
Mm-hmm.
That's in Luke 1, 46 to 55. So, again, in a quarterly which emphasizes the least of these, Luke gives us plenty to talk about. And, of course, you think of Jesus' birth. Where was Jesus born? Not in some fancy palace.
Mm-hmm.
He was born where the poor were gathered. Now, one other passage, the messenger of John the Baptist. They were wondering about Jesus, and they asked questions. Are you the one, or should we look for someone else? And of course, John was in prison, and that is problematic too. Certainly it was for John. Here he was the forerunner, and Jesus just left him in prison. Didn't do anything to deliver him. So when they sent the questioners to Jesus, what Jesus did was pointing to his ministry to the poor and the lowly as evidence of his divine mission. I think that's a powerful message that we need to keep in mind.
Yes, he goes and tells, like John is to know that with Jesus coming, the sign is that he's the one who cured the diseases of the people, the afflictions of all the people, cured the blind mm-hmm, and so mm-hmm. on. So that is the mark that John is to know that this is the promised.
This is the promised Messiah.
Yes.
Right. Now, there's another fascinating one, the return of the 70, Luke 10, 17 to 24. And the 70 came back just really excited because people had responded to their message and rejoiced. But Jesus, when they got back, rejoiced that the message was received by the lowly. That's in Luke 10, 17 to 24.
And the kingdom of God has come near you. That is what they are doing when that message is given to the lowly and to the ones who need it more. That is what God's kingdom is in that part.
Now, the one really large looming question, and I want us to take enough time to focus on this, was the message that nobody wanted to hear. Isaiah 53, the suffering servant. Now, when Jesus told the disciples that he must go suffer and die, what did the disciples say?
It should be far from him.
That's right. This should not happen to you. And the Messiah, if you look at the Messiah just means the anointed one, and typically it could be any anointed one. The word Messiah, it's a general term, was often used for the king. And Jesus was known as the Messiah, but the term doesn't necessarily mean that this was God incarnate. It simply means the anointed one. And when Jesus began to describe what the anointed one was, nobody wanted to hear that.
You think in terms especially of how shocking that would be if you have mainly thought of the anointed one as someone from the line of David?
Mm-hmm.
Right? The messianic promise is coming back again and again, the sprout of David, the line of David. He will raise up one from the house of David, and he will deliver the people, restore Judah. So it must have been absolutely shocking to have this. He will be handed over. They will mock him, insult him, spit on him, flog him, and kill him. That just wasn't right? Even the authors of the Gospels often put the commentary, right? They did not understand, meaning probably they could not. It didn't fit at all in the paradigm that they had in their minds.
Much less to think that this was God incarnate.
Mm-hmm.
See, it was probably 300 years before the early church
mm-hmm.
really came clear that this Jesus was actually God in the flesh.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there were inklings of that, to be sure, but it took the early church a long time to actually come to that conclusion. And we often think of the symbol as being supposed to be very clear. Jesus was the Passover lamb. But I find no evidence in the Old Testament that they made the connection there between
Mm-mm.
the lamb and the promised Messiah.
Mm-mm.
It was just the idea of substitution was there, but it didn't point to the Messiah who was to come. But when you look at those words in Isaiah 53, he was despised and rejected by others, a man of suffering, acquainted with infirmity, as one from whom others hide their faces. He was despised, and we held him of no account. Surely he has borne our infirmities and carried our diseases, yet we accounted him stricken, struck by God and afflicted. But he was wounded for our transgressions, crushed for our iniquities, and upon him was the punishment that made us whole. Those are powerful words, but even today they are difficult to accept, especially when we see this suffering servant as the model for us. That's the part that really becomes difficult.
We like to see our lives as empowered instead of weakened.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Especially when we come to accept the gospel. Huh. We like to become blessed and become powerful and become strong.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus' life is just the other way around. He goes to die, and he does it intentionally. He's on the way to that. And then Paul comes around and says, but we should be the body of Christ. Mm-hmm. But Christ's body lay in a tomb.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's terribly difficult in our success-oriented world to take someone who, by all earthly measures, was not successful and say he is the model for us to follow. But that's really what it's about. It's very interesting to look at the Jewish treatment of this. There is a special kind of literature called the Targum, which takes this entire Isaiah 53 and turns it from a suffering servant into a conquering king. Now, it probably was written after Jesus, but it is still a great challenge for all of us to listen to. But our time is up, so we need to close here. Thank you, Jody and Matilda. And my thanks to Abby Wissink, our program engineer, and to all of you for listening in for the good work. I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.